Hello, welcome to the Games Play Podcast, episode 83. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And we're here in a hot room.
It'll be better in a few months. It'll be cooler.
Yes, eventually.
Maybe by October.
Yes, and then it will snow.
Go Colorado. Anywho, so, there's a lot going on this week, but honestly, we haven't heard a lot of it since most of it's happened within the past 2-3 days, and I haven't read a lot of PAX feeds, to be honest.
I forgot it was going on. I was checking one of the blogs that I check on Tumblr is a gal who kind of, it's called Gamer Girl. She kind of focuses sort of on girl stuff, but a lot of like people who do like projects and such as well. So I like looking at her site, but she was like, I'm at PAX, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot again.
Yeah, there's going to be, I think they're doing another of the Dungeons & Dragons podcasts from PAX this year.
They did. Yeah. I follow Gabe on Twitter.
Yes.
And he was saying how it was fun playing Tim again.
Jim.
Or is it Jim?
Jim Dark Magic.
Jim Dark Magic, that's right.
Of the New Hampshire Dark Magics.
They gave him so much crap when he created that name.
Yes, as opposed to Will Wheaton's character.
What was his?
Well.
It's Will, isn't it?
No. It's Aelfel. But all the other people at the table always call him Al.
Ah.
Hence, do you not remember the outburst of, my name is Aelfel!
I need to re-listen to that. It's their games are actually pretty entertaining to listen to.
We did see a really crazy picture there of Will Wheaton with, I forget who he was posing with, but it had three moon, it was
three Wheaton moon,
yeah,
shirt.
Of him as Wesley from
Star Trek,
in different points of, you know, his Star Trek career.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other
else
guy,
has a three keyboard cat moon.
No,
I think.
It was just three wolf moon.
Oh, it was just the traditional three wolf moon.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was humorous.
Well, we'll actually try to read up on what's going up in PAX. That way, we can then retell you what we read.
We're starting to have our thoughts about. I would kind of like to go sometime, but homeownership. Homeownership is not cheap.
Yeah, it's expensive to. Well, the problem is we flew out to E3. And then we have a convention we are actually going to 2 weeks from now, so we can't really afford to fly out to Seattle and pay for a hotel room to fly back to Denver and then pay for, and then, you know, well, I guess we don't have to pay for a hotel room in Denver, but I've tried the whole staying at home and going to the convention thing since they moved down south. It doesn't work.
It's too far of a commute.
Yeah.
You don't want to drive. I basically live in northeast Denver, and the con is basically the opposite side of Denver on the south side.
Well, it's not that far west.
It's very south.
It takes a good 45 minutes to drive there. And if you talk to somebody from the East Coast, that's their entire, that might as well be their whole day.
Or someone from New Zealand. 30 minutes? That's ages away!
Yeah.
So the point is, I don't want to drive all there every single day and then drive all the way home.
I did do that when the convention was a little bit closer to you. But I was still coming back and forth with other groups of people I used to go with, and it was just like, man, just that drive.
Didn't we just stay here at a Simulator's place the year that it was over by the airport?
Yes, because it was literally 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you didn't have extra beds then. We slept on the floor.
I also didn't have. That was right before I ended up with the 5-roommate situation. That was like a month after I moved in here, I think. 2 months after I moved in.
Everybody else moved in. Well, you were the first person out of the group of friends who actually technically had their own place.
Yep. I was the first one to buy my own house out of our entire group. Anyhow. We digress. So, I hear you guys have been playing Torchlight still. Or at least trying to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rage quit.
Well, I had the fun one where it's like, usually when you zone into an area, most of the mobs aren't close to the entrance. And so I didn't usually worry about it. You know, I'd like let it go and load, I'd like go and pee or grab a drink or something while I was loading.
Like that time, you can just hit escape and it brings up the menu and it pauses it.
Oh, I know. But I wanted to let it load. It was on the loading screen.
It doesn't take that long to load, you let it load and then you pause it.
I am an impatient person. Yeah, anyways, I came back and I was dead. Yeah, so I came back and it was dead. And then I resurrected and probably died quickly again because there's just so much stuff on top of me.
It was like,
so these dang lizard guys who are... this has amused me, though, because they are named Tuataras, which there's a lizard in New Zealand called the Tuatara. Well, I should correct myself. It is not technically a lizard. It is a sort of lizard-like reptile. It is not technically a lizard in the, strict taxonomical sense.
Okay.
He's kind of a leftover from, like, the dinosaur age, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I rage quit. Mostly because I keep finding dark zealots who can kill me with one hit. And I'm like, I no sooner find them on the screen. I'm like, okay, there they are. I gotta be careful. Oh, I look dead. And then I resurrect, and I go back there again, and then I die again. And I'm like, nope, screw it. I'm done.
I had that feeling with a boss last night in Deus Ex. I have learned something very important. While you may want to play a nice, stealthy character, regardless that, shouldn't see much combat, and, you want to focus on quick kills through, close punch and then hide again, you still got to do stuff that boosts your health and your,
damage output.
Yes. Because I was fighting a boss, and I had none of the health advantages and none of the weaponry advantages, the stuff that makes my guns do more damage, and he wiped the floor for me for like 2 hours.
Yeah, I got that impression from my bro from his, conversations with Irish Pride after reading it. I'm like, that kind of sucks, because it's like, you're trying to give people choices, but then you still shoehorn them in saying that, okay, you can do all this choice throughout it, but when it comes to these boss battles, man, you can only do one thing. Which kind of defeats the purpose of having a different build if you can't destroy the boss in a different way.
Yeah, it was a real bitch. I know somebody said that, well, this is just them showing that even in a world of choices, sometimes you don't have a choice in what you get to do. But still, it was
but
a real...
But then that's not a choice!
it was still just a real pain in the ass, because I hadn't built my character that way so far. I built him so, I get to... It's like an enemy sees me, I draw him out to a location, and then knock him out, or something like that. Well, even when I had the boss immobile because I disoriented it or something, I still couldn't use any of my close combat abilities on him. So the only way I could destroy him is by throwing stuff at him that the level gave you, which is finally how I did do it, after way too much time.
That is how, to be fair, that's how I beat all the bosses in Vindictus. So far, it's just like, throw things at you.
Well, in this case, it's like, okay, so I would get away from him, try and stealth-ish over to this weapons cache that I had found earlier, take the shotgun, the frag grenade, and the EMP grenade, throw the EMP at him, which would cause him to freeze up since he was augmented, immediately throw the frag grenade, run around him before he spammed right where I was with his own frag grenades, which I don't know how the hell this guy carried so many freaking frag grenades. Then I would throw a poison canister at him, then I would throw an explosive canister at him, and then I would pray to God that I got enough shots off on him to kill him. It took me a very long time to pull this off.
Sounds like Clint and I's thing when we used to try to take down the AT-8, just the little one, AT-ST?
Yeah.
Walker in Shadows of the Empire, kind of duck behind the stairs, fire two shots at it, duck behind the stairs, wait till it can't see you again, take two shots at it. It took like 30 minutes to an hour to take down this one boss in Shadows of the Empire for the 64. That was way too long.
Yes. This boss took me way too long for any right size. I'm finally thinking, I don't care about this boss anymore. I just want to move on in the damned game. I just want to go back to the parts I enjoyed. So I might play it again and then just solely build myself out, sell guns, forget hacking and strength, guns, forget hacking and stealth. I will take out everything in the room. I don't care if I'm supposed to sneak past them. It will die! When I set off the alarm, it won't matter. There won't be anybody left to come to it. Anywho. So, yeah. Speaking of Deus Ex, if you bought the PC version at 99% of the places you could have bought it at, you would have gotten a free coupon to have an online version. Which, they were actually talking about this. They kind of talked about it being like 1.1 of 1.0 version of this giveaway. Eventually, they kind of want to move up to where you can actually share your PC saves to your online save, on live saves. That way you can play it on your computer locally, upload the save to online, and then if your computer goes down, you can play it off your little laptop.
The cloud.
Exactly.
Thank you, cloud.
Well, Steam already does that for us.
Steam does it, but with Steam, the nice thing about OnLive is like when my nice little computer's motherboard went haywire on me, I was able to play Deus Ex on my much lower powered laptop at the same graphical power that my that I could on my desktop. Hmm. Basically, I just hooked up the HDMI port to my TV, hooked up the wireless Xbox controller to there, and then just laid in bed and played it on the laptop. So there are advantages to that system. And then when you don't want OnLive, or say your network's down, or you just want the higher graphic outputs than what OnLive can currently put out with their existing technology, then you would still have your old local PC. Which I could see being rather cool. But apparently GameStop is trying to set up their own cloud computing system. And as such, when they found out that these coupons were in the PC versions, they sliced them open and took out the coupons. Many of you may have heard of this already. So, since then, they've done a few different things. First of all, they have stopped selling the PC version of the game at GameStop and are returning their entire stock.
Or stock that hasn't been sold yet.
Stock that hasn't been sold yet. If you did have a pre-order on it, they were still going to, they were going to their stock, pulling it out, and then giving it to you, but it probably still didn't have the OnLive coupon at that point. And then in order to make the people happy, because I understand why they did it, but I don't have to like it, and I still think it was pretty underhanded.
I think it's totally underhanded. You're basically violating, you know, your the other company that sent you their product, you're basically opening it up and saying, I don't agree with your, you know, something that's with your product, so I'm going to just, you know, do it without any discussion and give it to your customer.
I mean, wouldn't you be very disappointed if you went to the store and bought a banana and found someone had taken the banana out of it?
I would have been extremely disappointed if I was missing part of my banana. But so, basically now they have, they're, in order to make it good with people, if you come in with a receipt saying you bought the PC version of Deus Ex from GameStop, they'll give you the equivalent priced gift card that the game, that the OnLive card was worth. I believe it's about $50 is what they're giving you. Which technically isn't the... Well, yeah, PC games are still $50, aren't they?
Yeah.
Depends.
Depends.
I thought that,
Blizzard games like, are usually 60.
Yeah. Because StarCraft was 60.
That's Blizzard.
Yeah, see, it runs the gamut. It probably, you have probably stuff like 40, 50, 60. And if you have, like, you know, Steam things, it's usually not as bad.
Yep. 50 to bucks. $49.99. But so... They got in a lot of trouble for that one.
Well, yeah.
Thanks, Amazon. Because the Deus Ex Human Revolution Augmented Edition, that 4 cents was a real killer, was a real game breaker for me. I'm glad you dropped it from $59.99 to $59.96. That 4 cents was the breaker for me.
It makes you look at it and think it's cheaper. Which is why people list stuff at 20, you know, with the 99 and...
The Deus Ex Human Revolution Standard Edition download, that one they actually did good. They took it from $49.99 to $34.99. So by not getting the box or anything, you just download it directly to your computer, you're saving $15. Hey, wait, you mean to tell me that if I get something without any of the actual media that's cost that cost to print on it, it's cheaper?
Hooray! It's all going to be like that, eventually.
It'd be nice.
Though sometimes it is kind of nice to have, you know, some tangible things. I guess that's one thing growing up, was like the instruction booklets. I loved instruction booklets for games.
I miss the instruction booklets.
Because they were always bright and colorful and always had like illustrations and different things. I didn't really usually care about what I could do with the game. I just wanted to see what was inside and look at it because there was, you know, cool things usually in there.
What I usually liked was when they wrote everything in the flavor that you were actually of the actual game, and they would put little like backgrounds of what's going on in the descriptions of stuff, or like they give a little intro to the game.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you want to understand any backstory of The Legend of Zelda, the original, you had to read the instruction booklet.
Well, back then, in the older games, in order to give, in order to elaborate on stuff, they had to do it in the manual because it was so hard to program that in. Now, it's, you know, it's a cutscene.
Yeah.
I guess technically, at least we're saving paper.
Yeah, it's true. It's just, I don't know. I've always liked it, but I think it's, you know, the artist in me has always liked them.
I can see that.
It's just, you know, it's just not there anymore. And if they are, They're like 10 pages or less, and they're all in black and white, and just kind of describe the gameplay and nothing else.
I think I've gotten some where the little pamphlet that came with me telling me what is sold with that game's stuff on it was bigger than the pamphlet for the game itself. Anywho, that's all we have in our notes.
I did watch the latest, what's the word, production
videos
from The Hobbit. Which is looking amazing.
Sweet.
The dwarves look great. You know, I saw some, like, the stills, and I was like, the costumes look okay, and whatever. But then seeing people, like, in them and moving and talking and acting, it's just like...
It works much better. It gives you a much better sense of them being dwarves.
Well, yes. The problem I have with the stills is I think they're done, you know, taken with a very high-definition camera, and they look very sterile. And you can tell that they've cleaned up some of the edges and done some of the other stuff with hair and stuff, like wisps and whatnot, and it just looks, like I said, sterile. It doesn't look real. They don't look like... You just can't believe that, oh, that's a real thing. It just doesn't look right.
It looks like a statue.
Yeah. It looks very static, composited, generated.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the cavern scene with Bilbo and Gollum. And so it's actually...
Andy Serkis
in, like, the suit. And he has a camera strapped to his head with motion capture points, like, pan on his face as he's doing this. So he's doing motion capture not just for the body, but for all the facial expression.
Nice.
At the same time.
They're going to try to do better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like they didn't, you know, do a good job at, you know, Gollum the first time, but they're just, you know, really trying to up the ante and make it, you know, that much more kind of, you know, better animated from...
Well, it makes me wonder if they thought they didn't know exactly what they wanted to do yet with Gollum, because if you go back and watch Fellowship, you know, he's not really in it. You only kind of see one sort of shot of him looking when they're in the caves of Moria, because Gandalf, you know, tells Frodo, he's like, oh yeah, I know he's been following us. But he does, like, his face doesn't look the same as what it does by the time you get to Two Towers.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, it's like, you know, well, they probably needed that extra, you know, 6 months or whatever that they had extra after they got Fellowship ready to release for, you know, movie theaters, and they had that extra time to kind of tweak things for Two Towers the following year. Mm. And they probably tweaked some more stuff, too, for Return of the King.
Probably. I mean, they recorded for, what was it, 3 months? Solid?
Oh, more than that.
No, it was like 9 months.
Shooting was, a long time.
So, I mean, in that time... Probably 3 different things could have easily changed in the recording fit and the recording technologies.
Well, yeah, and I mean, well, part of that is, you know, it's most of Gollum's post-production, it ends up being, you know, because it's the special effects, it's the guys at Weta building the model and animating it.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, well, with what it is, you know, going to be now, it's going to be, you know, still going to be post-production to, like, you know, animate it, but they're going to have all of this... basically, like, information to go off of to, you know, really ease the animation so it's, you know, just going off, because Abel basically go off of Serkis's own performance.
Actually, I think that's a lot how they did, I watched the movie Paul this morning, which was a little alien dude that gets, hitches a ride with the two geeks, with the two guys on their way back home from Comic-Con.
Never heard of it, but
I heard
go ahead.
It.
Anywho, Seth Rogen played Paul the alien. Well, he actually physically played Paul for them to react off of and talk to. And I think they used kind of the same thing, the motion capture on him, in order to generate the facial images for Paul. And I think they did the similar thing for Planet of the Apes, for Caesar.
And that was Andy Serkis again, playing Caesar.
Cool.
He is the kind of go-to motion capture guy.
He can exaggerate his, you know, body language and expressions. Mm-hmm. But you need that exaggeration in the animation to sort of make it look real.
Mm-hmm.
Make it look believable.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, and I wish it wasn't still
a year
and...
2012?
Yeah, a year and a few months off.
December 2012! We still got a ways. But it's closer. At least they're actually filming and doing stuff.
Yeah, at least it's no longer... So I heard Peter Jackson's doing The Hobbit. So is Peter Jackson still doing The Hobbit? Whatever happened to that Hobbit movie?
There was arguments with the government and the film unions, and
so now they're actually recording The Hobbit. They're not just talking about making it.
Yeah.
They're not just in writing and deals trying to get it set up. They are actually doing it.
Yeah, they're in principal photography now.
So, yay!
Sad times over, not in New Zealand for it, though.
Yeah, so, like, the last production thing, they were on, like, the break between, they're doing, like, three sessions of shooting, basically, so mm-hmm. they have, so basically, the cast can have some breaks, so that they're not, like, dying by the end of the shooting.
You mean, like, they kept the last ones all kind of cooped up for the entire thing?
Yeah, but they were, but the, like, production crew was going out and scouting locations, so, Peter Jackson and, you know, all the... And the location scouts and some of the producers and such were all looking in. So they're like flying around New Zealand. I'm like, oh, cool, look at those places. Not, a lot of places, some of those are not places we've been before. And it's not places that they've shot, that they filmed before. They're going to some different areas. They're going around more like Dunedin Ways and such. Was still it? Some stuff around Queenstown, though.
Queenstown's a very beautiful area of the South Island of New Zealand.
Isn't it interesting to think that basically New Zealand is becoming Middle Earth more and more? Well, I think with that, we're going to go ahead and kind of call it for today, because it's getting insufferably hot in our recording studio.
I'm dying, Squirtle.
Go ahead and check out our site, specifically the store. We've added some additional product there, including polos for those of you that want to show off your nerdiness at work but have to have a collared shirt. We also have some iPad sleeves that are available. The additional, you know, t-shirts with the items on there. And you can set the t-shirts to whatever color they have listed there. I didn't put any restrictions on that. With that, go ahead and have a good day. Send us comments to mail@thegameslave.com, and game on!
Game on!
Game on!